Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark Levionier, bringing you an hour of crime. Later on, it's a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense from 1945. But right now, it's Counter Spy from September 29th, 1949 on ABC. Pre-1945, the series really focused in on stories of World War II with international crime and espionage, but then brought the stories of crime back home, as evidenced in this next broadcast called The Case of the Vicious Visitor.
Counter Spy.
Washington calling David Harding, Counter Spy. Washington calling David Harding, Counter Spy.
Harding, Counter Spy, calling Washington.
United States Counter Spies, especially appointed to investigate and combat the enemies of our country, both at home and abroad.
Tonight, the case of the vicious visitor. Another counter spy report to the American people. A penitentiary, its high, thick walls looming black in the darkness. Inside, a sudden flood of searchlights illuminates every corner. Gates clang shut, and a siren wails frighteningly into the night.
Attention! Attention all posts! Special alert! Block all exits! This is Warden Deans. Prisoner 196523, Rocky Gaines. Escaped from prison workshop 3 minutes ago. Block all exits! And be careful. Gaines is armed. He's a psychotic murderer and will shoot to kill.
Rocky?
Yeah, Al, I made it. You got the clothes?
Yeah, in the car.
All right.
You can change on the way. The hounds are getting closer.
Come on, let's get going. Oh, I'm fagged out, Al. Where's the car?
Right where I said it'd be, Rocky.
Yeah?
The road cuts through this swamp just a few feet ahead. The dogs are getting closer, Rocky.
I got this far, Al. I'll get the rest of the way, I hope.
There's the car.
That is in the back seat. You can change it.
What? Rocky, I'm hit.
A couple of shots might hold him off a minute. Al, come on, get in the back. Quick.
Can't move. This one.
All right, come on. I'll help
you in. Oh, come on. Give up. Rocky, you ain't got a chance. Give up.
No chance, huh? I got this far. You watch me get the rest of the way.
To David Harding, Chief United States Counter Spies, Washington. From Warden Deans, Alderlander Federal Penitentiary, Maxton City. Rocky Gaines, serving time here for armed bank robbery, made successful break 5 p.m. this date. After gun battle with prison search squad in nearby swamp, Gaines and unidentified companion made getaway in black Buick sedan.
Rocky, where you driving it?
We gotta ditch this car, Al. These woods are as good a spot as any.
Rocky, them bump. Every time you hear the bump, it kills me. I'm all shot up.
Oh, they got money on with two. You don't hear me yapping, do you?
Hurts, Rocky. Honest, hurts.
Yeah. Oh. Okay, we'll leave the jalopy here. Come on, Al. Get out of that back seat.
I can't.
Out, I said. We gotta keep moving.
I can't, Rocky. I swear. Down to my legs. I can't move. Rocky, I'll wait here for you.
What do you mean, wait?
You gotta get me a doc, Rocky. Please, Rocky, a doc's the only one that can help me.
Oh, sure, sure. Doc, I'll say, come with me and help my pal. He got shot helping me break out of the pen. Sure, you come running.
You gotta do something. I can't take it. It's like a fire inside of me. You're my pal. You gotta do something.
Okay, Al, I'll do something for you.
Bucky, that gun. What's the idea?
I told you I'd do something, didn't I? This'll put you out of your misery.
Rocky, don't.
You're going to die anyway. I'm doing you a favor.
Don't pull that trigger.
So long, Al.
Wait.
See you around.
Rocky.
To David Harding, Washington, from Conway, now at Albany Field Office. Black Buick sedan used by Rocky Gaines in prison break, found in woods 16 miles north of here. Bullet-riddled body of unidentified man found in back seat. For identification, I'm forwarding fingerprints, bullets removed from body, and blood samples. Go ahead, Chief.
Harding, Washington, to Conway, Albany. Identification reports that fingerprints of the dead man are those of Alvin Troy, alias Al Trojan, formerly a sidekick of Rocky Gaines. We're working on blood samples you forwarded in the laboratory. How's it coming, Dr. Love?
Well, I've finished the blood test, Mr. Harding.
And?
I'll have a look. This microscope first. Now, that's a specimen of the blood we found in the rear seat of the getaway car. Type O.
The dead man, Al Trojan, had type O.
Yes, sir. Now, look at the specimen under this other microscope. See, that's a smear we got from the front seat of the car.
That's different.
It certainly is. Type B blood.
Which means that the man driving the getaway car was Rocky Gaines. And he must have been wounded by the prison guards, too.
Undoubtedly.
Well, Dr. Lawton, when the other reports are completed, let me know. Uh-huh. I'll be back in my office with Harry Peters. Test Peters proved that the bloodstains on the front and rear seats of the car were of different types. Now, what did ballistics dig up about the bullets in Trojan's body?
Something even more interesting, Dave. Of the five slugs probed out of Al Trojan's body, only two were .30 caliber. The other three were .45s.
What?
Yes, sir. And the prison guards used .30 caliber rifles.
And we know that Rocky Gaines was armed with a revolver, undoubtedly a .45.
Nice boy, Rocky Gaines.
This means he murdered his own partner.
Rocky must have figured that Al Trojan wounded was a dead weight on his hands. And dead men tell no tales, especially to the police.
Well, from all we know about Gaines, this doesn't surprise me, Peter. According to the prison report, Gaines is a psychotic triggered finger type, a purely emotionless killer without normal human conscience.
Pressure coming in on the radio, Dave.
Harding, go ahead.
Conway, Mr. Harding. I'm in Tannersville. I got a lead on Rocky Gaines.
Let's have it.
Less than an hour ago, a motorist picked up a hitchhiker on a back road 20 miles from here. And then at gunpoint, the driver was forced out of his car and left high and dry.
The driver identifies the hitchhiker as Rocky Gaines?
Positively.
What direction did he drive off?
North.
All right, Conway. From now on, we'll use Tannersville as the focal point of our operation. Set up an emergency base for us there.
Right, Chief.
Why Tannersville, Dave?
Look at this map, Peters. Here's Tannersville. The last large town this side of those mountains. Now, you heard Conway. Rocky was driving north.
Which means he's probably headed into the mountains, hmm?
Right. Now, with the local police, we'll set up blocks at every intersection of those mountain roads. Rocky may get into those mountains, but he has at least one bullet wound. Sooner or later, he'll have to get help up there, or come out for it. And when he does, we'll have to be close by, or some innocent people may get killed.
Norma, this boat engine sounds kind of peculiar to me.
Oh, Cliff, there isn't a thing wrong with a boat, and you know it.
Well, it still sounds funny. I can't put my finger
now,
on the...
Now, darling, you're just looking for another excuse to take the motor apart again. Now, isn't that it?
Trouble with you, Mrs. Benton, is you know too darn much about me.
Well, now, imagine a husband admitting that.
Hey, you're running us right into the city.
Oh, I am. I'm sorry.
All right, I'll bring it in easy. Yeah. That's it. Okay, kill the motor.
Huh?
This is a nice landing.
Thank you.
Any special you want in town, Norma?
No. Yes, Cliff. Will you stop by Jane Tompkins and ask if she heard anything about that material I ordered?
Jane Tompkins' material. Anything else?
Not a thing. I'll be back to pick you up here at 12.
All right, honey. Here at the jetty at 12.
Bye.
Nice boat you got there, lady.
Oh, thanks. My husband takes a lot of pride in it.
Looks like things turned out okay for you, Norma.
What?
What's the matter, Norma? Don't you remember me? An old friend like me? Take another look.
Rocky Gaines.
Been a long time, huh, baby? How many years? 15? Still don't look a day over 20.
What are you doing here?
You don't look so glad to see your old friend, Rocky. You and me used to get along swell in the old days, remember? Norma and Rocky? Quite a pair.
What do you want, Rocky?
For old time's sake, baby, just a little favor.
What kind of a favor?
I happen to be in the neighborhood, and I remember hearing that after you left town, you come up here and married yourself a square, some guy who runs duck hunting blinds out on that island on the lake.
Yes, we live there, Cliff and I.
I figured that island's just about the right place for me to lay low a while till the heat's up. What do you say, Norma, baby? For old time's sake?
I'm sorry, Rocky.
I got a slug in my shoulder. I need a doc to take care of it. I got a healthy wad of dough. You'll get nice room and board.
No, I won't do it, Rocky. I can't. I'll just pretend that you weren't here. But I didn't see you.
You pretend, huh?
It's the best I can do, Rocky.
The best you can do? Now, you listen to me. I'm wise to your setup, baby. Nobody around here is supposed to know what you were before you came here. You're a nice, sweet lily of the valley in these parts,
Rocky,
huh?
I've changed. I'm different.
Norma, baby. That character Cliff who got out of that boat a few minutes ago. You two looked awful happy from where I was standing. Ever tell your husband about the old days, Norma? About yourself and Rocky Gaines? No, I guess you didn't. Now, you wouldn't want to spoil everything to make Mr. Benton unhappy, would you?
Of all the places in the world, why did you have to come here?
Now, baby, I knew you'd come through for an old friend.
Oh.
Now, after you take me over to your island, you call the town doctor and tell him there was a gun accident.
But, Cliff, what will I tell Cliff?
Just tell your husband that an old friend named Steve Evans is staying for a visit. Now, turn that motor over, baby. Let's get out to that island fast.
Harding, go ahead.
This is Conway, Mr. Harding. We've just located a car stolen by Rocky Gaines, lying at the bottom of a ravine, completely wrecked.
What about Rocky?
No trace of him, Chief.
What's the location, Conway?
Just off a dirt road called Elder Lane, 9 miles south of Crystal Lake.
All right, Conway, we'll head that way.
Better step on it, Chief.
Right, Dave. We'll have to turn onto Route 16A for Crystal Lake.
Crystal Lake.
It means Rocky's still moving north.
Yes. Without a car, he's going to be slowed down.
Dave, now we can start closing in on Rocky Gaines from all sides.
Yes, and let's hope we get him before any innocent bystanders excite his murder-mad mind.
David Harding and his assistant, Harry Peters, looking for the escaped federal prisoner and murderer, Rocky Gaines, are now in the office of a Dr. Raymond Vincent in the town of Greendale on the shore of Crystal Lake.
Dr. Vincent, this is my assistant, Harry Peters.
How do you do, Mr. Peters?
Dr. Vincent. Well, now, if you'll tell us the story, Doctor.
Well, of course, Mr. Harding can't have any bearing on your case, but that man of yours who stopped by here was so dead set on my telling you.
Well, please go ahead, Dr. Vincent.
Well, it was like this. Now, yesterday morning, the phone rings. It's Norma Benton, place over on Mallard Island.
Mallard Island?
That's a big island a few miles out in the lake. It's called Mallard on account it's a dandy spot for duck hunters. Matter of fact, it's the best darn spot in the state. Cliff Benton and his wife Norma, the only ones who live on Mallard. Cliff keeps the duck blinds in repair. County pays for it, you know. It brings business here.
Well, Doctor, what about Mrs. Benton's telephone call?
Well, it seems Norma Benton's got a friend that came to visit. Friend's name is, I have it here on a card. Evans, that's what it is. Steve Evans.
Steve Evans. And then, Doctor?
Well, it seems Norma was showing this Steve Evans fella some of Cliff's guns. One of the darn things goes off, and this friend is shot right smack in the shoulder. You have quite a few accidents like that up here. You know, you've got to be careful with firearms.
Doctor, do you have the bullet you extracted?
Well, he usually do, you know, but this friend of Norma Benton's, what in tarnation was his name? I got it here on a card.
Evans.
And
Steve Evans.
That's it, Evans, yeah. You've got a good memory, son. Well, this Steve Evans tells me he'd like to keep the bullet for a souvenir of his visit to Crystal Lake. Some folks are kind of funny that way, you know. I once knew a fellow.
Well, Doctor, we won't take up any more of your time. Thank you very much.
Well, you're entirely welcome. I suppose I wasn't of much help to you, though.
Well, you never can tell, Doctor. Goodbye.
Goodbye, gentlemen.
What do you think, Dave?
I'll bet you my pension that the Benton visitor is Rocky Gaines. Hop in, Peter. Yeah. Harding to Conway in master control car.
Conway to Harding, standing by.
Believe we've located Rocky Gaines on Mallard Island in Crystal Lake. Have all mobile squads in area report to me at Lakeshore Town of Greendale. That is all.
The wind-up, Dave?
Well, not just yet, Peters. I'm interested in Norma and Cliff Benton.
Why should they protect and harbor a criminal? Suppose they don't know who he really is?
Well, in that case, those two are in terrible danger. Rocky Gaines is a pathological killer. If we make any hasty move, he might murder them.
That's true.
On the other hand, the doctor told us that Steve Evans was an old friend of Mrs. Norma Benton. Peters, before we close in on Mallard Island, I want a complete checkup on Norma Benton. Then we'll know how to handle this capture.
Well, that was a real swell dinner, Mrs. Benton.
Norma's my favorite cook, Mr. Evans.
You're lucky to have a wife like her.
Yes, don't I know it. But Norma, dear, you haven't said a word all evening. Is there something wrong?
No.
You hardly ate anything, did you?
I wasn't very hungry, Cliff.
Something on your mind, maybe, Mrs. Benton?
No, there is nothing on my mind.
Norma, dear, something is bothering me. Now, you haven't been all right for the past few days. What is it, dear?
I'm all right, Cliff. How many times do I have to tell you I'm perfectly all right? Now, let me alone.
Norma, wait.
I just want to be let alone.
Norma!
Looks like I maybe started something, Mr. Benton.
No, it's not your fault, Mr. Evans. Only I can't understand what's gotten into her. She was always so happy here, you know, on the island. Such a safe, peaceful place.
Yeah, Mr. Benton. This island's about the safest place I've ever been in my life.
All right, Scott. Thanks very much. Peters, you get all that on the extension?
All of it, Dave. This is Norma Benton, formerly Norma Marks, the entertainer at the Black Grotto in Bayside from 1931 to 1934. An old flame of Rocky Gaines. That undoubtedly means Mrs. Benton is giving help to Rocky.
Yes, Peters. She's hiding him. Now we know how to handle this.
Yes, I'm Norma Benton. What is it?
I've been waiting for you to come over here from the island.
But who are you?
Agent Harry Peters, United States Counterspies. Come with me, please.
And that's the story, Mr. Harding. Rocky Gaines forced himself on me. I had to take him.
You had to? Why?
Because I didn't want Cliff, that's my husband, to find out what I was once. I didn't want to hurt him.
I see.
Can you understand what I mean, Mr. Hardy?
Well, yes, Mrs. Benton, but there are a great many people like you who make the same mistake once you were in a bad crowd, but at least you had the sense to get out. You've nothing to be ashamed of.
Some people don't see it that way.
The right people do, Mrs. Benton, and from everything I know about your husband, he's certainly one of the right people.
I was crazy to help Rocky, I know. If I had come to you in the beginning, Cliff wouldn't be in such danger now.
Danger?
What do you mean, Mrs. Benton?
Rocky warned me not to let Cliff leave the island until after he's gone. He keeps his eye on Cliff all the time. Follows him, never lets Cliff out of his sight. And Rocky always has that gun with him. He told me that if anything goes wrong, if I make just one slip, he'll kill Cliff.
Hello?
Hello, Mr. Harding. This is Cliff Benton.
Mr. Benton, yes.
Norma's not in the house now, but she told me about your talk with her. Rocky Gaines finally went to sleep. I just checked to make sure.
All right. Peters and I'll start for your island right away.
All right. The moorings on the south shore.
I know. We should be there in less than 20 minutes.
I'll be waiting for you, Mr. Harding.
You'll be waiting, huh, Benton?
Gaines.
I told Norma what had happened if either of you tried playing games with me.
You should have left my wife alone.
You... I knew her long before you did, you...
Gaines, don't hit me again.
All you and Norma had to do was keep your traps tight till I got away. What did you have to squeal for?
The counter spies found out themselves, Gaines. You're licked now. They're on their way here.
And you think I'm going to sit here like one of those dumb ducks of yours, huh? Well, I can play games too, Ben, with red-hot slugs for you and for Norma.
Wait, Gaines.
Wait, yeah, don't worry. I'll wait till Harding gets here, and then I start.
Mallard Island just ahead, Dave. Make for the jetty on the south side, Peters.
Right.
Peters.
What?
Through the trees. That light.
Light?
Right in the center of the island. Over there.
I see it.
That's the attic light in the Benton house.
Norma Benton's danger signal to us. Something must have gone haywire. Maybe Rocky tumbled to the plan.
Let's get to shore.
I'll make it fast.
Mr. Harding. Mr. Harding.
Benton, Dave.
Mr. Harding, did you see the attic signal?
Yes. Last I heard it from your husband. What happened?
I was outside the room when Cliff called you. Rocky caught him at it, so I switched on the signal light in the attic and ran down here.
We'll go right up to the house.
Yes, but Mr. Harding, Rocky plans to kill us all. Cliff, me, and you. He's waiting for you to arrive. But if he finds out that I'm gone, he won't wait. He has Cliff in the living room.
Peter, Dave. We'll have to improvise fast now. You circle around the house. I'll have to take a chance of going up the front way with Mrs. Benton. There's a back door to the living room, isn't there, Mrs. Benton?
Yes.
Okay, Peters. You come in through the back. I'll try to stall Rocky Gaines while I jockey him into position. Now, your cue to come in will be this sentence. Don't be a fool, Rocky. You got it?
Don't be a fool. I'll set on it, Dave. I better... Shot, Dave.
Cliff! Let me kill Cliff!
Mrs. Benton, wait! Don't go back there alone! Wait! Benton, we heard the shots. We
Mr. Harding, it wasn't Cliff. Thank heaven it
those
wasn't.
Those shots, Mr. Benton. What happened? Where's Rocky Gaines?
Right here, Harding. Behind. Get your hands up, Harding. You and Benton both. That's it. Now keep him that way. By the way, Harding, where are all your boys? I saw you come up the path alone.
I came over alone, Gaines, to talk sense to you.
Yeah? What kind of sense?
Give yourself up, Rocky. You haven't got a chance of getting away from this place alive.
Look who's telling me about getting out alive.
There are counter spies stationed all along the shore. Don't be a fool, Rocky.
Fool, huh? I got out of tougher spots than this. So I set this house on fire, your Boy Scouts will all come over here on the double. That's when I make my break with the boat.
I told you before, you haven't got a chance in the world. Don't be a fool, Rocky.
Shut up. You're holding up this party, and at this party, Harding, you're the guest of honor. And like they say, the guest of honor should get the first helping.
Dave?
Oh, you're telling me, Peters. What happened to you? I said the signal sentence twice.
Dave, believe it or not, those woods out back are thicker than we figured. Took me a while to get through.
It's a good thing they weren't any thicker. All right, Mrs. Benton?
A little shaky, but yes, all right. If Cliff is.
We're both very grateful to you, Mr. Harding, for saving our lives. And our life together.
Well, it cost Rocky Gaines his life. And that closes the case of your vicious visitor.
Thank you.
When your friends drop in, be generous, but be thrifty, too. Serve plenty of delicious Pepsi-Cola.
This is David Harding again. A special word to employers. Give work to our handicapped veterans. Next time a job opens, write to Captain Maurice Witherspoon, Masonic Veterans Committee, 71 West 23rd Street, New York City. Give our fighting men a fighting chance for rehabilitation.
Tune in every Tuesday and Thursday, same time, same station, to Counter Spy. Listen next Tuesday for the exciting Counter Spy case of the Sweepstake Murders.
When frightened witnesses could gasp only, "Murdered by a golden sword." When strange and eerie sounds came from the depths of a ship. When a man had to be shot at to make him talk. These were some of the elements your Counter Spies faced in our next case. Tune in on Tuesday to
Case of the Sweepstake Murders on Counter Spies.
Counter Spy, on Tuned 2 yesterday from the 29th of September, 1949 on ABC. You're listening to an hour of crime on Tuned 2 yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVanier. And now time for radio's outstanding theater of thrills, suspense, with a story penned by Gene Russ Kern. And apparently this was his only contribution to all of radio, during its golden age at least credited. Or it could be a pen name. But we do know his story is called Murder Off Key, and was heard on CBS on November 15th, 1945.
Roma Wines bring you Mr. Zachary Scott in a remarkable tale of suspense.
If I could just shut out that singing, I'd be all right. But it goes on pounding inside my head, and I keep hearing Violet screech those desperate, urgent scales. The first time I heard her, I was sitting on the balcony outside the apartment, and everything was unnaturally still, the way it is late at night. And maybe that's why her singing sounded louder than it actually was. There was something abnormal about it, as though a control inside her had snapped, and she couldn't stop that horrible noise that was coming from her throat. It went on over and over again, rising and falling and scraping the hot night into shreds.
Terrible, isn't she?
What?
I'm over here on the next balcony.
Oh, sorry, I didn't see you. What did you say?
She's pretty terrible, isn't she? And she thinks that's a trained voice.
Awful. Does she do it often or only when the moon is full?
Oh, she goes on like that almost every evening. You must be new around here.
I just got into New York this afternoon.
Are you visiting Mr. Morley?
Well, in a way. He went out of town. I'm staying in his apartment.
I didn't mean to sound prying, but he told me he was going on a vacation, and I wondered if he'd left.
Her family must be all deaf mute.
No, she lives alone.
Well, that's not hard to understand. Hasn't the manager done anything about it?
She has too much money. They'd never ask her to move. But someone should do something.
They could always try strangling her.
What did you say?
They could always try strangling her.
Oh, she heard you.
Oh, do you think so?
I hope so. Well, I must be going in. Good night.
Good night.
Roses of shining.
It was in the lobby the next afternoon that I met her. When she came up to me, I knew instinctively that she was a songbird of the night before. She was past middle age and was ignoring it. Her hair was dyed and piled up in coquettish curls, and she used some kind of heavy, sweet perfume that was overpowering. She came tripping up with the usual old white poodle dog yapping at her heels.
Pardon me. Would you hold this package for a moment? I have so many things I'll never find my keys.
Well, I was
well,
just...
Thank you so much. Oh, now, Petty. Is that nice, making such a fuss at this charming gentleman?
Oh, no, he's...
What
he's
will he think? Oh, I don't know what I'm going to do if this weather keeps up.
Yes, it's...
I've always been on the delicate side, and I've never been able to stand the heat. When my husband was alive, and he's dead now, he always whisked me away to the ocean the first warm day. Even when I was in the theater. Oh, my manager would be furious.
Well, I can understand
it. I can't imagine where my key is. Would you hold Teddy for me?
Well, I don't know.
Oh, thank you. Now, Teddy, and he won't hurt you.
Well.
My husband used to say to me, Violet, my real name is Imogene, but he called me Violet.
Well,
it's always been my favorite color. Violet, he used to say, you must go to the sea, or you'll be withering those lovely petals of yours. And before I knew it, we were in Atlantic City.
That's very nice.
Oh, here's that horrid little key on my key ring of all places.
Well, those things sometimes happen.
Thank you so much. I don't know what I would have done without you. My husband used to say, Violet, you're a woman who needs a man around. Of course, he was a pillar of strength himself. Oh, and to think of his dying of a gallbladder that way. Well, thank you again. Now, what did you say your name is?
Oh, Carlson.
Oh, how nice. Carlson. Such a sturdy, dependable name. So suitable for a man. You must come up and have tea with me sometime.
Well,
I have a special Chinese brand. It smells like dead flowers.
Going up.
But au revoir until we meet again.
That next meeting would be never as far as I was concerned at that point, but it actually happened that night. She was at the scales again about 9 o'clock, and there was a desperate urgency in her singing. It was the last frantic attempt to stop the clock and the double chins and the fading life. Those pathetic scales had a shrill terror that made me embarrassed listening to them. Well, as though I were eavesdropping on some shameful secret. It was then that I went to leave the balcony and saw the sheet music lying behind the urn. My first impulse was a humanitarian one, and I threw it in the wastebasket. But for some unknown reason, I suddenly felt a kind of pity for that woman singing alone up there. And the next thing I knew, I was on my way upstairs with the music.
Yes, what do you want?
Oh, is Violet in?
Violet? I'm sorry, old boy. She must have given you the wrong number.
Oh, I thought it was on this floor.
Oh, hold on. If you mean Mrs. Pondecker, it's the next apartment.
Oh, sorry to have bothered you.
Going in for tea? Or do you have your own bank account?
Thank you very much.
Oh, not at all, not at all. I'm always glad to help a music lover.
As I stood there in the hall, I began to think about that leer he had given me. And I was about to turn back when the door opened.
Oh, Mr. Carlson, you've come for that tea after all. How nice. Oh, be quiet, Petty. Be quiet. Do come in.
Oh, but I just found
it. Not a word. Come along.
Violet had outdone herself, and a trailing negligee of purple chiffon and the usual clutching hand went with the outfit. There was something obscene about the hand fingers, heavy with diamonds, the nails polished too red. Obscene and pathetic. The room was heavy and operatic, just like her. There were glass cases and curio cabinets filled with every imaginable kind of glittering thing. Rings and bracelets, brooches. Most of it in terrible taste, but all of it unquestionably expensive.
Oh, admiring my collection? Most everyone does. Your friend, Mr. Morley, just missed it. Be quiet. Oh, I do believe he's jealous of you. You know he has a sixth sense about admirers. I remember when I was in the theater, he used to carry on dreadfully when my dressing room was filled with fans. He bit my husband in the leg. Oh, now, sit down in this chair. I'm afraid all the others are too small for a big man like you.
Well, I really came to return this music. It must have blown down on my balcony.
Roses of Picardy. It's always been one of my favorites. My husband simply adored it. I remember I sang it to him on Saturday night, and that Sunday afternoon he was dead.
Well, that must have been quite a shock.
Oh, I sometimes wonder that I'd found the courage and strength to go on. Of course, my music has been a great consolation. Now, you sit right down. I won't be a moment. Petty will look after you. Won't you, Petty, huh? The roses are shining. You can't be here and answer that. It's probably the elevator boy.
I've come to take the Oh, a new one.
Yes, what is it?
I came for Mrs. Pondicker's dog to take him for a walk.
Here he is, and he's all yours.
Thanks. Come on, Rintin.
I didn't care for the way the elevator boy smirked. And as I sat there in her apartment with that heavy perfume suffocating me, I cared less for the trapped feeling I was beginning to have. It wasn't until 2 days later in the garage that the trap closed.
Good morning, Mr. Carlson. Can I do something for you?
Oh, no, thanks, Joe. Just want to get my sunglasses out of the compartment.
Well, your car's right over here. I cleaned her up for you. Gee, it was a mess, let me tell you. You must have run into something.
What?
The whole front was stuck with brown stuff and white fur, like you hit a dog or a cat, maybe.
Funny, I don't remember hitting anything.
Well, don't worry, I cleaned it off.
Hey, Joe.
Yeah?
Wait a minute.
Wait, something wrong?
Tell that help of yours my car's in an ash can. They dumped all these old newspapers in the back.
Oh, gee, I'm sorry, Mr. Carson. Well, just give them to me. I'll throw them out. Boy, they sure are a mess. Looks like something out of a butcher shop, don't it? Well, it won't happen again, sir. You can bet your bottom dollar on that.
When I came upstairs, I was still trying to figure out the angle of those stained old newspapers, but I didn't have long to wait. I found out the minute I stepped into the lobby.
Oh, Mr. Carlson, thank heavens you're here. I've been out of my mind. It's Petty. He's disappeared. We can't find him anywhere. I just know he's been run over. I just know it.
Run over? Whoa. When did all this happen?
Last night, when this wretched boy took him out.
Now, look, Mrs. Pondicker, it's like I told you. I only stopped in for a cup of coffee, and the next thing I know, the dog is gone.
Of course he's gone. Some uncouth person in that saloon undoubtedly made off with him. Well, there's only one thing to do, and that is to offer a large reward. Don't you agree, Mr. Carlson?
Oh, yes, yes, that's a good idea. But I knew then, as sure as I was standing there, that nothing would bring Petty back. Just as I knew that he had been in my car sometime last night, lying on some old newspapers. That's why I wasn't too surprised at first when the heavy blonde man with the soft voice came to see me.
Mr. Frederick Carlson?
Yes, that's right.
I'm from headquarters. I'd like to ask you a couple of questions about this Pondicker business.
Have they found the dog?
I didn't know about that, huh?
Well, she mentioned it to me.
You two were pretty friendly, weren't you?
Well, I spoke to her a couple of times. Hey, what is this? I don't... Come into my place full of innuendos. I don't see...
There's no need to get excited, Mr. Carlson. I'm just checking up on the people who last saw her alive.
I still... What are you talking about? She's dead?
Very much so. She was strangled sometime last night.
The heavy blonde man with the soft voice asked a few more questions after that, and then he left. The motive was robbery. Very valuable jewelry and a great deal of money. Everything gone. It seemed Violet was in the habit of drawing out large sums and keeping them around in old beaded purses and tarnished gilt boxes. It all fitted in with Violet, who was so helpless without her pillar of strength and who sang those desperate jangling scales. Obviously, she had no idea of financial matters. Somebody else had plenty of other ideas, and I was one of them. I knew it that night when I went around to the corner automat. Yes, I was definitely one of them. There was no doubt about it.
Do you mind if I join you, Mr. Carlson?
It was soft voice, smiling down at me over a cup of coffee and a piece of pie. Murder a la mode.
I always come here for their apple pie. Have you ever tried it?
Haven't gotten around to it.
You should. It's excellent. Can I have the sugar? Thank you. How'd you happen to come here for your vacation?
Oh, I don't know. I was short on cash, and then Morley wrote and suggested I stay in his place. It seemed like a good idea at the time.
You don't have that letter, do you?
Say, what is this?
No need to get excited, Mr. Carlson. I was just asking. Oh, you really should try this pie. The apples are just right, firm and tart. Dog, How should I know?
It's a very interesting angle. I understand he was a regular burglar alarm. Always barked if anyone ever came to the door. And then he disappears the night before her death. Very convenient. Don't you agree?
It would look that way.
Can I have some more of that sugar? Thank you. I never seem to get enough. Did you drive up to New York?
That's right, and I haven't run over any dogs or anything else, so you can skip that.
There's no need to get excited, Mr. Carlson. I never suggested that you did. I was just asking a simple question.
If you haven't any more simple questions on your mind, I'll be going on.
Of course. Don't let me detain you. I think I'll have another piece of this pie. You really should try it sometime, Mr. Carlson.
As I walked away, I could feel him watching me, hunched over the table, his small eyes wary and suspicious. There's no doubt about it. I was the idea. I rode around on top of a bus for almost an hour, and I kept thinking about the dog and that white fur and those stained newspapers. I knew I had to go to the garage and have another look at my car. The garage seemed deserted, and only one arc light cut the blackness and stretched silently ahead. It was then I passed the office booth and I first heard the voices. There were two men and they were standing by my car. It was Soft Boys, full of apple pie and suspicion and wide awake on those two cups of coffee. He was asking Joe about my car.
It looked like he did something. But I couldn't say it was a dog. It might have been a cat.
But you're certain about the white fur.
Huh?
Was there anything else you noticed?
No. No, I don't think. Well, yeah, there were some newspapers. At first, I thought, seeing as how they were all stained, that maybe he had put in them whatever hit, you know? Excuse me, somebody must be out there.
Well, Mr. Carlson, glad you came in. Perhaps you can clear up a few things for us.
Look, I don't know anything about the newspapers or the stain, but I can tell you this much. I never ran over a dog, and I can prove it.
Well, then. That's all we're interested in.
I haven't taken the car out since I came to New York. Joe here can tell you that.
Well, you did take it out once, Mr. Carlson, the night before last.
Are you crazy?
Oh, gee, I'm sorry, Mr. Carlson, but I remember you called me up and asked me to bring it around. Here. Here. You can look at my record book. You must have forgotten about it, because, 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock. That must have been just about the time the elevator boy took the dog for his walk.
From that time on, Soft Voice was after me. I was his man, and he didn't miss a trick.
Now, you say you talked to Carlson last Saturday?
Yes, I was sitting out on the balcony.
Did he mention Mrs. Pondecker in the conversation?
We heard her singing. She had an awful voice. And he asked about her, whether she had a family or lived alone. I don't remember anything else. But it was the oddest thing. I mean, his suggesting strangling her and now this. Makes you think, doesn't it?
And Mr. Carlson came to your door the other night?
Yes. Yes, he was asking for some woman by the name of Violet. At first, I never connected it with Mrs. Pondecker. She seemed a bit old for him, but you never can tell. Probably mutual interest in music,
Yeah, that's right. I came to get the dog, and this Carlson guy opens the door. But I don't think nothing of it. Working on the elevator, you see a lot of that, you know. Oh, some of the stuff I could tell you.
It was about this time that I began hearing those scales again. They were so shrill and desperate, I thought everyone else must hear them, too. I even heard her on the elevator. What are you staring at?
Nothing, Mr. Carlson. This is your floor. Hey, do you think the police will catch a guy who done it?
I don't know.
I figure it must have been somebody who knew her and been in her place. Those old dames always go for the young guys. I say, find her boyfriend and you got to kill her. Am I right?
Why ask me? How should I know?
Well, you'll have to get sore, Mr. Carlson. I was just asking.
Well, what are you waiting for?
Me? Nothing.
Well, shut up. Stop it, do you hear me? The concert's over.
Good evening, Mr. Carlson.
Oh.
I
hope I didn't startle you. The elevator boy let me in.
Well, what's on your mind?
I just wanted to go over a few points with you. Do you know anything about a resort called Orchard Beach? It's not far from here.
Yes, I stayed there for a couple of weeks last summer. Why?
Strange you never ran into Mrs. Pondecker. She played in the summer theater there.
I told you I never saw her before I came here. If you're trying to pin this on me, you're wasting your time. Look, how could I have planned this thing? I never even knew I was coming here until Morley wrote me and asked me. He'll tell you that.
Unfortunately, we can't seem to contact Mr. Morley. You don't have his present address, do you?
All he said was something about a camping trip, but he's bound to turn up in a couple of days and he'll set you straight on all this.
That is, if he turns up alive.
What do you mean by that?
I was just considering a possibility. After all, if anything happened to Mr. Morley, he couldn't back up your story and he couldn't deny it either, could he? Well, I'll be getting along. Good night, Mr. Carlson.
Don't leave Papa Lotito.
That night, the scales were louder than ever. They went on, over and over, echoing in the room, shrill and urgent, and I couldn't shut them out. Shut up, do you hear me? Shut up!
What? The devil's going on in here?
Morley. Morley, good Lord, I thought you'd never turn up.
Well, I always say it's nice to be wanted, but if I'm not too inquisitive, may I ask what you're doing in my place?
I'm waiting for you so you can tell him about that letter.
Letter?
The one you wrote when you asked me to come here.
Well, now, look, I don't care if you stayed here, but I didn't write you.
But you must have, Morley. I read the letter. I tell you, I saw it. I held it in my hands. It was real.
All right, Carlson, don't be so tragic about it. After all, it's not a matter of life and death.
It certainly is. Look, Morley, you don't know what's been going on here. Ever since I got here. Me nearly crazy. There doesn't seem to be any way out.
Well, Carlson, there's no point in sitting out here on the balcony all night.
No?
Oh, I'll admit you're in a bad jam, but it's not hopeless. They haven't arrested you.
It's only a matter of time.
But they haven't any proof. And I can tell the police I wrote that letter. I suppose I can.
Well, you'll have to be more convincing than that. No thanks. My neck's in the noose, and I might as well face it.
Now, let's not be noble, Carlson. It's only a technicality. I think I can make them believe me.
Too late now. They're here.
Who's here?
The police. The car just pulled up.
Are you sure?
Soft boy. Yeah. And I don't like the way he's bouncing with so much energy.
Why should he come now?
Someone must have tipped him off your back. He was anxious to see you as I was. Morley, is there back stairs here?
Yes, why?
I'm going to try to get out. It's my only chance. Will you help me?
Sure, certainly, Carlson. I'll show you where to go. I can at least do that.
I had to try. I couldn't just lie down and take that rap, and there was no way under heaven I could escape it legally. I followed Morley off the balcony, and when we got to his living room, it was almost more than I could stand. Because the singing started again, but not the scales this time. Roses of Picardy. Roses of Picardy, she was going to follow me all of my life. I almost dropped in my tracks. Something, I guess you'd call it a hunch. Something about the stiffness of Morley's back made me hang on. And Morley swung around. It was more than a hunch. Morley was sweating. I decided to play it for all it was worth.
Who's that?
Who's what?
Don't you hear something?
What are you talking about?
Nothing. Come on, you better hurry.
Well, I don't know.
Hurry up, Carlson.
I don't know. Now that I think of it, I don't know.
But you said yourself.
Yeah, but all my life I'd be ducking the law for something I didn't do.
You said yourself it's your only chance.
Yeah, but that'd be worse than being convicted. Anyway, how could they convict me? The evidence is all circumstantial.
There's an awful lot of evidence, Carlson. The dog being killed by your car, the threat you made against her, and your being at Orchard Beach the same time she was there.
Yeah, that's a clincher, all right. But how did you know? How did you know I was at Orchard Beach? I never told you. You haven't talked to Soft Voice yet. Come on, Morley. Tell me how you did it. Tell me how you killed Mrs. Pondecker.
You're out of your mind.
How did you get the car business fixed? Did you disguise your voice and take the keys while I was out of the apartment? That would be simple enough to do.
Oh, crazy.
And that sheet music on the balcony. Did you plant it? Well, you had me right where you wanted me. A beautiful frame-up. It's a shame to ruin it.
I don't have to ruin it. I can...
No, no. You can't kill me, Morley. I'm your fall guy. Remember?
I can kill you in self-defense. I can kill a murderer who's living in my apartment, who's threatened me. Unfortunately, the police didn't get here in time, and in simple self-defense, I had to... Oh! Oh.
Yeah, but they did get here in time, Morley.
Yes, Carlton. You're very lucky.
How much did you hear?
Enough. He was a slick boy. He had you measured for the noose, all right. How did you get him to open up?
Well, in a way, I didn't. It was the Roses of Picardy.
Roses of...
Well, I thought it was Mrs. Pondecker. And when she started Roses of Picardy, Morley thought so, too. It scared him green. Scared him more than me. You know, I thought everyone felt the same about Violet singing, but not the little girl next door. The only thing she had against Violet's voice was professional jealousy. She thought her voice was better, but Violet could drown her out. Listen. Well, someone else will have to strangle her.
Roma Wines have brought you Zachary Scott as star of Murder Off Key. Tonight's study in Suspense.
Suspense, on Tuned to Yesterday from November 15th, 1945, a CBS episode. And that wraps up this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVillier. Thanks for listening.